Melinda Gates wants to get more women in tech, and she's doing it partly through venture capital. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. You know Melinda Gates as the co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The longtime philanthropist is also the founder of a for-profit organization called Pivotal Ventures that will, among other things, fund venture capital funds that invest in more diverse entrepreneurs and women-led companies. Such funders are known as limited partners, or LPs. But the name is misleading because LPs hold the purse strings and can set a VC's agenda if they want to. I asked Melinda Gates how being at the top of the venture capital food chain can have an impact on the whole system.
We're trying to create an ecosystem. So we're both trying to get some leverage by moving money and saying these funds can make a difference. They can be smart business. We know they are. But then I want to make sure that there's an ecosystem there that really fosters this community so that more and more women and minorities come forward with their ideas, so that they're recruiting more women, they're retaining more women and minorities, really that they're also collecting better data on how are they doing truly on diversity.
Let's talk about LPs and the venture capital universe for a minute. You know, usually it's university endowments, it might be pension funds, high net worth individuals like yourself. Is it easier for you in some ways to fund a fund with these expectations than it might be for something like a pension fund? Or is that a misconception?
That's a misconception. If a pension fund wants to move money to women-led businesses, they can absolutely do it. They just need to decide to do it. But they, believe me, they've got a pot of money inside their pension fund that does a little bit more risky investing versus the sort of more traditional. You just have to make the decision that you care about it and you want to do it.
What can you say to people who run those pension funds, say, to convince them that it's worth taking the risk or reshaping their priorities?
I would say, look at the track record. If they're going to move money to the VC space anyway, which many of them are, a certain piece of their portfolio goes to the VC space, there are great VCs out there who maybe haven't been at it as long as some of the other ones in terms of having their own fund. But these are very smart investors. They've learned this space over more than the last decade. So just over-index a little bit in terms of what you look at, because they are out there. But I think sometimes a pension fund doesn't even know to look and say, okay, are there funds specifically for women-led and minority businesses? And have they gotten a return? People have this image in their mind that, okay, we have to do what we've done before and anything else is risky. Well, no. I mean, think about what has changed society. It's the small, sometimes a small person, like the one person or two person organization that disrupt whole industries, but they don't always come like a white male in a hoodie. It turns out one or two women can disrupt an industry, but you have to look for people who know how to find those women or find those minorities.
And of course, everyone knows that you worked in tech yourself. You were at Microsoft in the 80s and 90s. You have a degree in computer science, an MBA. But there were more, you know, to your point about what's happening in the United States, there were more female computer science grads back then than there are now. What do you think has happened?
Nobody actually knows. Again, I've gone back to look at the data, what has been collected on why we've lost so many women getting computer science degrees at the undergraduate level. And nobody truly knows the answer. But the belief is, from when you look at when that peak happened, which was about at the time I was in computer science, the industry became a few years after that very gamified. The big thing being sold on personal computers at the time were these games. And a lot of them were sort of shoot 'em up games, war kinds of things. And when you used to have Pac-Man or you used to have the adventure kinds of games, girls were interested in those things. Women were interested in those things, the more sort of social or neutral games. But as soon as the gaming industry became very male dominated, very male focused, girls sort of started to leave the field in droves saying, I'm just not interested in that. And they became sort of a self-reinforcing wheel. And the more men and boys that went into tech, the more young women and girls would say to themselves, I don't see role models. I don't want to be like that guy behind the computer with a hoodie on who's sitting there every day. I want to have a life. And so less and less girls and young women went into the field. And we have to reverse that.
That's so interesting. So do you think that if the computer industry had developed more around utilities and maybe social media earlier as opposed to around video gaming, that it might have been more female friendly all along?
I think there's a chance of it, certainly. I think there's definitely a chance of it.
Do you have like a research project in the works at Pivotal to to find out if they, because that would be really interesting to try to quantify.
It's honestly hard to go back to say, it's hard to say to somebody, to a woman, well, why did you choose this major? You know, if you go back 20 years, why did you choose, did you consider computer science and why did you choose biology instead? Or why did you choose political science or creative writing instead of computer science? It's hard for people to say, well, I was truly thinking of computer science and I didn't go down that route. Now we can go back, and people have gone back and interviewed women who were in computer science and had done a few years of it in college and then dropped out. Those interviews have actually been done. And again, there's a lot of women will talk a lot about bias. They'll talk about a professor who turned them off. They'll talk about no teamwork. And it felt so individual and I couldn't find anybody like me. So we actually know women who went into the field and left. We know why, but we don't know the women who considered it, but then didn't enter.
So then I guess that gets to the question of whether, you know, you're doing incubation too at Pivotal Ventures, but whether money is enough to help women succeed. Like what other factors need to be built in? What other things need to happen?
Well, we need to make sure that we create multiple pathways for young women into the tech sector. So whether they want to go in and get a 4-year computer science degree, whether they want to go in and get a 2-year degree, whether they go somewhere else first and then switch into computer science, we need to make that part work for them. We need to make sure that we role model and we use the great female technologists who are out there and innovators. We need to hold them up and show that they look different from one another and that they had a lot of the same doubts these young girls had, but how they succeeded and how they got where they are. And then we basically need to do the VC thing that we've been talking about, which is how do you move more money to women-led businesses and how do you create this ecosystem so the whole thing feels more welcoming to young women and girls.
And then, of course, the Gates Foundation on the other side of the table has made women's equality a big issue in general. Is it sort of a part of a holistic effort of Melinda Gates' work to kind of close the loop with a for-profit entity also?
Definitely. So I felt like with the foundation assets that we have, I started to very intentionally have our organization from top to bottom start to really look at equity for women and minorities. And so as I started to look at the work for many, many developing world countries, I started to ask myself, well, how far have we really gotten in the United States on women's equality or minorities equality? And the answer was, as I'd be flying back home from these countries, not far enough. And so I then created Pivotal Ventures to make sure that we could actually start to make investments in places that we could change society, even in the United States.
And what's the benefit of a for-profit entity over a nonprofit in that case?
Well, a for-profit entity can expect to make a return on its money for one thing, but I do, through Pivotal Ventures, do both sides of the equation. I do both grant making and investments. And so I have a little bit more freedom to do that through Pivotal Ventures than I would necessarily at a nonprofit.
And then is there also a scenario where you're able to actually demonstrate the functioning ecosystem that we talked about?
Yeah, I demand on both sides of the equation, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, real data. I mean, one of the reasons that we don't move money, quite honestly, to women's issues, women's, let's say, health issues around the world, we don't have the data. Nobody actually collects the data, good data, about women's lives. Well, the same thing is true on the for-profit side. What does pay look like at levels, at all levels in the technology sector? How many women do you actually have in different types of roles? I'm going to demand that in terms of some of the VC investing as well, because again, that data shows us where we truly are as a society and then where we want to place money down. Because the thing I know from the foundation is what gets measured is what gets done, and we need to get this done.
Melinda Gates is the co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and founder of Pivotal Ventures. The organization wouldn't share how much it intends to invest in funds or companies directly, but it's put money into at least 3 women or minority-led VC funds so far. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM. As a nonprofit news organization, Marketplace is able to do what we do every day thanks to funding from public radio stations, foundations, corporate underwriters, and yes, listeners like you. Thank you to all the Marketplace investors who've contributed over the last year for helping keep public service journalism going strong. We really appreciate your support.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.